Welcome to The Roofer Show with your host, Dave Sullivan. You found the podcast that helps roofing contractors grow their businesses, make more money, and have more free time. Each week, Dave interviews the industry's top experts who will give you actionable tips and strategies for the real world of construction to help you take your roofing business to the next level. So let's get down to business.
Hey everybody, welcome to The Roofer Show, the place to be if you want to grow a more profitable roofing business. I'm your host, Dave Sullivan, and I've been a successful contractor for over 30 years, and I'm here to share with you what I've learned. You can get more tips, strategies, and downloads by going to my website at theroofershow.com. We've got a great show today, and my guest is Michael Stone with Markup and Profit. Michael's been around the construction business for the last 40 years, and for 20 of those years, he's been a consultant and coach for contractors. He's written a number of books, two of which I have is Markup and Profit and Profitable Sales, A Contractor's Guide. He's also taught over 26,000 contractors how to make more money in their construction business with his two-day seminars that he holds around the country. I went to his class last month and just picked up a ton of information. It's got some great stuff. I've been in the construction business for over 30 years, and I learned all kinds of new things that I never even thought of before. It's a great class. Highly recommend it. The class started off with the reasons why so many contractors go out of business. And basically, it's a matter of cash flow. When the money stops, the business ends. And Michael has six reasons for the failure of most construction companies. And that's what I wanted to talk to him about today. So let's jump into the interview with Michael Stone. Hey, Michael, thanks for coming on to the show today. I really appreciate it.
Well, you're more than welcome. We're always we're glad we can help out. We're glad to do so.
Great. As I mentioned, I went to your class here last month, and two-day class. I learned so much, just a ton of material. I've been in the business 30 years, and I came away with some great knowledge. We could just go on for hours, but I wanted to focus on this one topic, and you list this out in your book as the top six reasons contractors go out of business, and I'm just going to list them off real quick, and I'd like to get into them. Sure. Number one is not charging enough for their work. And number two, failure to use or improper use of change work orders. Three is failure to use or improper use of legal contracts. Number four, too many employees for the volume of work being produced. Number five, improper payment schedules on their contracts. And six is lack of profitable sales. Let's get into each of these and see what, as your experience shows us, what's going on here. Let's look at number one, not charging enough for their work. Now, I know that That's a huge problem that we all face in the industry. What can you tell us about that as the number one reason that contractors go out of business?
Well, they're too busy. They bought into this BS, if you will, of the I got to be competitive, all right? Mm-hmm. And the reason I say it's BS is, if you stop and think about it, competitive is being competitive is optional, but being profitable is not. You're either profitable, you're gone. And so when these contractors get the idea that they have to be competitive, well, what in common parlance around America today, what does being competitive mean? Well, that means I give you the lowest price and I win the bid. Now, you tell me what's wrong with that picture. I mean, it just doesn't make any sense to participate in that.
Okay, that's what we call the race to the bottom.
There you go, pal. I mean, I'm there in a jet speedboat getting there. Oh, man. I see it. And it's, you know, I've been doing coaching now full time for over 20 years, and invariably when guys call me, the average is they're about $125,000 in debt. They got three or four credit cards maxed out, their line of credit's maxed out, and you know they're getting further and further in the hole. And of course, you know, they all think that they're doing things right, and oh, I'm in there, I'm bidding, I'm being competitive, and everything else. And I just say, you want my help, you're going to get rid of that crap right now. Forget this being competitive. You're going to be profitable or you're not going to take the job. It's that simple.
But I'm just going to make it up in volume, though, can't I?
Nope. Construction is a cost-based business. It's not a market-based business. In market-based businesses, you can make stuff up in volume, i.e., you lower your price on one thing and you make it up by increased sales in other parts of your business, other things that you sell. Construction, every job must stand on its own 2 feet, and you're not going to, you can do hundreds of jobs, and if you're not selling them properly, you're not going to make it up. You're going to go broke.
So it's different than the airline business.
Well, airlines is a market-based business, yeah. I mean, if you take a look at the seating in there, you get an airline ticket today or 3 months from now for the same flight, you're going to pay a lot more 3 months from now than you will today. They raise and lower their prices depending on demand and all the rest of the stuff. In construction, we can't do that.
And for another $10, they can put another seat, fill another seat in there. It's totally a different problem just because we've got so many variable costs, so many direct costs that go into the jobs. Is that right?
Yep. And construction, you have your job costs, which rarely change. You got so much for labor and so much for materials, and you say, well, labor is all different. You're right, it is. But you pay this your guys on the job the same amount each day that they come to work. And that expense is there every day. It doesn't vary. And you can't cut your price on that, because if you cut your price, then you don't have money to pay your people. So that's one side of it. And the materials are the same way. Materials go up and down, but not near as much as most contractors believe they do. A little bit surge recently on prices, but not that much.
That's something that I see a lot is contractors are scared to raise their prices. They just think they're going to lose all their business. I can never do that because my customers won't stand for it.
Well, that's true. You find that the good companies out there, have you ever noticed, David, and you go to any town, anywhere in the United States, this is true. There's always one company that's considered higher price than anybody else in town. But you notice something about them? They're always busy. This idea that you have to cut your price or lower your price or keep your prices down, it's in the mind of the contractor. It's not in the mind of the customer. You know, the National Association of Home Builders did a survey of 20-some years ago of over 2,500 customers of contractors in the New England states. And they listed 20 different things that the customers would prioritize on what their reason was for buying from a particular contractor. And they found that the customer buys the salesperson or the representative from the company first, be it the owner or whoever they represents them. The company is purchased second. The job is third. Price is all the way down to seventh or eighth on their list of priorities when it comes to purchasing construction services.
Yep.
And it only goes up to first or second. If you're here, like as an example, if you're hearing your price is too high, that's almost always brought on by the salesperson. It's almost never brought on by the customer.
And also what I always found was those people are going to refer you to like-minded customers.
Exactly. That's another thing, right along the same lines. These contractors at Evertrade, free estimates, and we do free this and we do free that. Okay, free only attracts people who are looking for something for nothing. And this is why I tell contractors, take the word free out of your advertising, off your promotions, off of everything. Don't even list it anywhere. Okay, you're after the customers that no one understand they have to pay a fair price to get good service.
Yep.
That's the customers you're looking for. And if you're not getting those, if you're getting people that saying, well, how much is it per square foot and stuff like that, that's not the customers you want.
Yeah.
Let your competition have those. You focus your marketing and advertising on finding the people that understand they have to pay for good quality, value, and service.
So let's jump into number two, which is the failure to use proper change work orders. Now, there's something that I see all the time. What can you tell us about that?
Oh, boy. Oh, we could talk all day on that one. But the failure to use or improper use of change work orders is the number two reason people go out of this business. And it's too often change work orders are left until the end of the job. Too often change work orders are not put in writing. It creates all kinds of problems to try to collect the money. And that's where it goes. The contractors don't collect 100% of the money due for the change work order, and of course, then after all is said and done, you know, their markup, if, say, as an example, a roofing contractor is using a markup of 1.4 and he doesn't collect on all his change work orders, he could essentially end up with a markup of 1.15, 1.2 or something like that on the entire job. And, of course, that's going to take him right out of the business. Okay. So change work orders have to stand on each, again, they stand on their own, and they should be priced on their own. And, you know, the contractors have to know their laws very well. And that's the other thing they don't know and understand. Like in California there, you have some specific laws that were written that deal with change work orders, and the contractors need to know what those are. And that's in particular on how they're, how change work orders are to be paid. Okay. But generally speaking, the biggest issue I find is that change work orders are not written prior to the work being done and agreed to prior to the work being done. Contractors do them and then come back and expect the homeowner to pay, and they blindside them, or, you know, they, it's a complete surprise to the homeowner. Well, you didn't tell me that. Well, I just found it, the inspector required it, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, that's just asking for trouble.
Right. And I just see that all the time. But also, how do we respond to the customers that we get into it and say, hey, you should have known that deck was rotted, for instance. Why should I be paying for a change order?
Well, that kind of trickles over into the lack of use or improper use of contracts, which is the third reason construction companies fail. But they're kind of tied together in that your change work order procedure should be specifically and clearly spelled out in your contracts exactly what is covered and what is not. And, you know, you show me a situation and I'll show you the wording you can put in your contracts that stops this business about the owner saying, well, you're the expert, you should have known that. We can stop that real quick and get rid of it, okay? As an example, you were talking about, well, there's rotted roofing up there. That should have been in your contract, you know. Any deteriorated materials on the structure, on the decking or the structure of the building will be, when found, will be considered an additional work order. Work will stop, and owner and contractor will review what needs to be done. Contractor will price it out, write the change work order. Owner will sign the work prior to the job, the change being done. Now, you know, depending on what it is, that wording can change quite a bit. But basically is that you've got it in writing and they've agreed to it before you start the job. In other words, when they sign the contract, they've agreed to the terms and conditions in that document. Okay, and as long as you're covered in there, here's what will trigger a change work order on your job, i.e. surprises. Okay. And if they don't like it, then you just walk away from the people because, you know, they're out to try to get you to do work for them for free.
Right, right. And you've got to get those, you do, as you say, you've got to stop work and get those things signed, because if you're going to wait till the end of the job, you're going to have a fight, you're going to have an upset customer, and I just find that all of this comes down to communication, which is, as you say, starting off the job correctly where, you know, we're going to run into some problems pretty much guaranteed once we get that roof taken off. So you need to understand that. That's going to be a change order. Another problem that I see is you can't get enough money for change orders because you get one or two rotted sheets of plywood. By the time you get that out there and replaced, it's going to cost a lot of money. And you got to explain why it's so much and have good communication and get that change order signed. Because if you don't, you wait till the end, it's just not going to work out. You cannot do that. Now, I know that you want to see change orders signed for anything over $500. Is that right?
Well, I frankly, any change of any kind should be figured out upfront and signed.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't put a minimum limit on it. If it's $50, I would. If it's $20, I would make them sign a change work order, because that also gives you a chance to adjust your completion date right on the change work order. And you know, when we did our 2-day class, I talk about when you write a change work order, if it's going to take you 2 days to make the change, you put 4 days on your adjustment to your final day of the contract. And, you know, you under-promise and over-deliver. In other words, you can get it done in 2 days, do it. And but you tell them four, and that way it makes you look good, where if you tell them two and it takes you four, another ball game altogether.
Yeah.
As far as the problems on getting paid for change work orders, you know, in every state but California, I tell contractors, you know, you get paid for your change work orders before you do them.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, before you even start them, you get paid. You get the money in the hand. Now, California has got that rule of change work orders, I believe. In fact, I can't remember the exact wording on it, but something to the effect that change work orders get paid after the work is done.
Right, right.
And see, and that just doesn't work.
Yeah.
See, this is a case of where your legislators got busy and are legislating against the effects of a problem and never against the cause.
Well, that's a whole other story.
Exactly. Oh, yeah. And the other thing is, that, you know, I've done arbitrations for well over 20 years. And invariably, the contractors, when they come to me in home or building owners or contractors come in with a problem in arbitrations, you know, if the contractors are get their change work orders written, and maybe, you know, they don't get paid for them up front, but they get the change work orders written and signed by the customer before they start the change, they rarely have any problems in the arbitrations for that.
Well, that brings us into number three, which is let's lead into the failure to use good legal contracts. And as an arbitrator, I have to imagine you see all kinds of these problems with either lack of contracts or just bad contracts.
Yeah, we get calls, not a lot of them. We get calls probably once a month in here from a contractor complaining they can't get paid by the customer, and, you know, ask them several questions. And I say, well, what does the paperwork say about that? Paperwork being the contract. Oh, well, we didn't have a contract. Biggest one we've had on no contract was a $5.5 million commercial contract in San Francisco. Okay. Fortunately, the contractor called me, and I knew the attorney there in San Francisco for him to call. And the guy got it straightened out real quick. The attorney did. He got in and got the contractor paid for the work. But they had $5.5 million job and no contract, no paperwork of any kind.
That's crazy.
And it's just, it's crazy. I mean, why would you do that? Well, the guy was working for his friend, and of course his friend died, and somebody else stepped in, and there you go.
Oh, jeez.
See, that kind of stuff happens. So, yeah, contracts should be, thoroughly written, every job. I don't care if it's a $200 patch on a roof. You should have a contract that the homeowner signs before you get up on that roof.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and if you got a 3,000 or 4,000 square foot roof or 10,000 square foot roof, whatever it is, a thorough, clearly written contract is your best guarantee to prevent problems. Problems, i.e., you hearing from their attorney or ending up in arbitrations or worse, mediations, which is to me is the worst possible thing you can have in a construction job. But generally speaking, if you have a well-written contract, you will seldom, I would say it probably eliminates over 90% of all the legal problems contractors have if they would simply, you know, take the time to put together a good written contract.
Along those lines, you'd mentioned mediation and arbitration. So what is it that, as a contractor, that we would want to have in our contract? What's better, or do we just want to be able to just go directly to court and sue them?
Okay. Mediation works fine for disputes between husband and wife or girlfriend, boyfriend, stuff like that. That's mediation. That works fine. Mediations assume that when everybody comes to the table, they all want to get the problem solved. That's not true in most cases in construction. In most cases I found, and I've been doing arbitrations now for over 20 years, that when people show up in front of me as an arbitrator, it's almost always that the customers, not the there's bad contractors, I'll give you that. But most often when they show up in front of me, it's because customer doesn't want to make the final one, two, or three payments on the contract, and they've got all kinds of stories and reasons, okay? This is why when you have a contract, you should have, it should be in there that, you know, that there will be binding arbitration by a non-attorney arbitrator. Now, in the state of California, the state supplies, they have a group of arbitrators, and they're all attorneys.
Right.
Okay? And every time you do an arbitration, you're paying to educate that attorney on the particular problem you're having in your construction job. Or if you find a non-attorney arbitrator that knows construction inside and out, you're going to get the problem solved very quickly.
That's a great
point.
Because
they don't understand construction. Yeah.
Yeah, because attorney, you know.
I'll give you an example. If I can give an example on this thing, on this arbitration thing, I cannot remember, and I've done expert witness work since 1980. I cannot remember a single arbitration I've been to that took less than 3.5 days by an attorney that was an arbitrator. Okay? My average arbitrations take 3 hours.
Yeah.
Okay? So that's the difference. I mean, if you want to pay the extra fees for all that falder, then that's fine. But generally speaking, again, you know, binding arbitration means you get in, you get the problem solved, you get done, get the job done, get away, and get on down the road. Mediation assumes that everybody wants to solve the problem, and I found that is rarely the case.
Right.
Mediation always gets torpedoed because somebody just decides, well, I'm not going to agree to that. And there goes all your mediation efforts. And you can talk all you want, but the bottom line is, you know, you don't have one person making the final decision. You've got a group, a committee, so to speak. And you know the old story about, you know, what's a camel? It's a resource designed by a committee. So that's kind of where you're at.
Well, I think the best way to win a fight is to avoid one. And this comes up, just as you say, good contract, good communication, explaining to the customer what's going to happen. And they need to know that it's going to be, this is going to be a major disruption to your life. I just want to be up front with you. Here's how we're going to avoid these things. Here's how we're going to deal with them. And it just comes down to communication. Because if you do have to go, whatever it is, it is so costly to have, not only just in the time suck and the energy that it takes to go do this battle, but it's just, you're gonna have bad reviews. Reputation's going to be damaged. That person's going to win or lose. They're going to come out of there pissed off. Yeah, so.
That's one thing. The contractors, you know, they don't put enough time and energy into getting a good contract. Here's another point. I remember in our class we talked about on contracts. This is another mistake a lot of contractors make. They talk about money up in the body of the contract, and all talk about any money on a job should be on the last page of the contract, the last page. And that way the owners or building owners or whoever can't come back and claim they didn't understand the payment schedule, didn't understand the contract price, didn't understand any of that. That stuff all goes away when everything is compiled right above the signature line on the last page of the contract. And if they do that, contractors would find that goes a long way in solving a lot of problems.
Yes, I hear you. Well, let's jump into number 4, which is having too many employees for the volume of work being produced. What do you mean by that?
Well, there's a every company has a general volume or total sales that they need to maintain on a per employee basis. I'll give you there's not been much research done on this, although you know I've done quite a bit as far as like remodeling contractors. A good remodeling contractor should be able to sell, build, and produce about $500,000 by themselves. And the scale in our markup and profit book shows that it drifts all the way down to where in a remodeling company, they should never do less than $180,000 per year per employee. Now, roofing contractors would be probably maybe just a little bit more than electrical contractors. I've done some research on electrical contractors, and a good electrician should be able to sell, build, and produce about $250,000, about $250,000 a year by themselves, and their minimum production per employee out at 15 employees and on should never be below about $115,000 to $120,000 a year. My suspicion is roofing contractors should be probably in the neighborhood of $300,000 to $325,000 minimum. Produced by themselves, and you know the minimum per employee should be down in the $130,000 to $140,000 range per person. That graph is in our markup and profit book, and each company needs to make up a graph for themselves. But the bottom line is, the contractors need to know what that number is and make darn sure they maintain it, because what happens is when production goes down, i.e. you got too many employees for the amount of volume of business being done, your overhead expenses go up. And when overhead expenses go up, that means they suck the money right out of the company. And now you don't, and your employees have to be paid first. And if they're, you know, if you don't have money, if you spend all your money on your employees, you don't have money to pay your other overhead expenses. You know, you can't let your rent slide or your mortgage slide. That's got to be paid. And you can't not pay fuel for your vehicles because they've got to move around and do the job. That's kind of where you're going with all that.
Okay. Now, here's a big one, which is number five. The fifth reason that contractors go out of business is improper payment schedules on their contracts. And this is something that I see all the time. But and contractors, yeah. Well, I can't get deposits up front. You're saying that's not the case.
Oh, of course it's not the case. You know, these contractors have done is arbitrarily decided because they were down at the coffee shop and Joe Bob says, well, you don't need down payments. You can't get down payments. Well, what they're saying is they don't know how to ask the question properly. You know, I've been in this business 55 years. I started selling remodeling in 1969. I cannot think of, there was three cases in all that time where somebody refused to give me a down payment up front, and I just walked away from them. I just said, no thanks. I'll just get up and walk away. Okay? Down payment means money has changed hands and a commitment has been paid, or made, not paid, but made. You need to get some money down. That means the customer is committed to you to do the job. And if you're having trouble getting a down payment, or if your customers are telling you no, I won't do that, then you need to stop and figure out what you need to change in your presentation, not the customer. You're not going to change the customer, but if you word your presentation right, you will have the customer expecting to give you a down payment, and then it's simply a matter of you figuring out how much you want. So if you do a good sales job. When I say a sales job, I'm not trying to smoke and mirrors type stuff. I'm talking a good sales presentation where you represent your company fairly and accurately and you're being fair and honest with the customer. You won't have any trouble at all getting a down payment.
Mm-hmm. Now, I've got a 2-week job. I've got my down payment. And mm-hmm. I'm going to say, what's wrong with saying, okay, cash upon completion?
What's wrong with it? It's going to hurt your cash flow.
Well, I know what's wrong with it, but why don't you tell our audience?
Okay. All right. Yeah. Okay. Oh, all right. No, a 2-week job should have a down payment with the contract, and then you can have several other small payments. One of them would be a material deposit fee up front where you get the money to pay for your materials. Another would be what we call a job initialization fee, which is your startup fee to move your equipment in and get set up. That's non-productive work, that move-in. Everybody thinks it's part of the job. Well, yeah, it is, but it is not part of the job, physically part of the job. The move-in fee is where you move in your dumpsters for tear-off. You know, you cover your landscaping and stuff with cloths and stuff to protect them from stuff coming off the roof. You got to move your guys in there. You know, if you're doing, if you got a hot pot or something like that, all that move-in stuff costs you money. So there's nothing wrong with getting a job setup fee. And then if it's a 2-week job, I would get at roughly, you know, halfway through the job or 60% of the way through the job, I would get a progress payment. And then your final payment on the final day of the job. So you should be getting, on a 2-week job, you should be getting 3 or 4 payments. At least, probably 4 would be better than 3.
Otherwise, you're financing this work for them.
Yeah, that's exactly it. You're financing the customer's job. Now, unless you've got lender's insurance, which is required by every state, you're effectively, when you do that, when you're lending them money to build their job, you're illegal right there.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, of course, nobody ever talks about that, but that's the truth of the matter.
Well, and then you get that, you know, where you've got 90% waiting till the job is complete. And they're saying, oh, okay, you know, you see this all the time. Oh, great, you know, well, that means 30 days out. So, and most contractors will go, okay, I'm going to wait for it, and then the way that generally works, they've got a bill. Well, I'm going to wait until they call because why should I pay my bill? It's not like PG&E. They're going to turn off the lights here. And they wait for that phone call. Okay, you give them a call and say, okay, I lost the invoice. Can you send it to me again? And in the meantime, you're going out 2 months. You've got 90% of the price of the job tied up that you've financed for these guys. You've got two or three, four jobs going like that. This is why contractors go out of business, because they run out of cash.
Yep, that's exactly right.
Yeah.
And it's all preventable. But if you write your contracts correctly, if you have a change work order written when they should be, your payment schedules on both change work order and your contract should include your payment schedules for that particular, that portion of the work. There's no argument about how to be paid. And right. If there is an argument, if the customer wants to argue about a payment schedule, if you're smart, you'll walk away.
Yep.
You know, David, I've never seen as much work available to contractors in my 55 years in this business as there is today. And the idea that you have to take a job is just nonsense.
Right.
In fact, the bottom line is if you have to take a job, you're doing things wrong.
Exactly.
I mean, you've put yourself in a corner that you shouldn't be in.
Just along those lines, work is booming. Things are going just gangbusters, certainly out in the Bay Area here. Now, in my experience, correct me if I'm wrong, but I've seen as many contractors go out of business when they're booming as they are from lack of work. And that comes down to the cash flow there. Would you agree with that?
Yep. Yeah. It may be, you're familiar with the what I call the crunch and December 2008, January 2009 was the bottom of the last downturn. And right after that, we had probably more people going out of this business than I've seen before or since. But generally speaking, it's going to be like 55, 45, maybe even 50-50 as far as failure between good times and bad times. But it's almost always self-inflicted by the contractor, you know. Mm-hmm. Not doing, or doing one of the six things we're talking about here, Harry, this morning, is that'll gobble up probably 95-96% of all contractor failures will be covered.
Yep.
And these six things we're talking about this morning.
Well, let's get into the sixth item of why contractors go out of business, which is the lack of profitable sales. What can you tell us about that?
Well, going out and giving out bids and giving your work away for free, or giving it out at less than what it costs you to build. And so that's part of it. The other part of it is not selling, not having enough sales in to even cover your expenses.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of a combination of both. These contractors get all caught up in this being competitive, and that's not the way to do it. You want to be profitable.
You do call it the lack of profitable sales, and I agree with that. You can have sales.
Yeah.
They've got to be profitable sales.
Yeah, and that's it. If you can't make a good profit, i.e. 8% minimum, then walk away from the job.
Mm-hmm.
There's so much work out there right now. I mean, you talked about it earlier, about this. Their focus is on the wrong thing. Their focus is on bidding jobs. And of course, you know, like we've talked about earlier, bidding jobs means that implies I'm going to give you the lowest possible price, and if I'm lower than everybody else, then I get the job. And I'm saying, oh, joy.
Yeah.
What's wrong with that picture?
Yeah. You know. Well, this is why I would rather do less volume at a higher margin, because one, you're going to make more money. You're going to have less trucks going down the road that have the chance of getting in an accident or whatever. Less employees, because we can't find good labor anyway. Get those prices up.
Well, here's the other side, though. I mean, let's talk about. Can't find good employees. The reason you can't find good employees is because all the good ones now are working for companies that understand they have to pay top dollar to attract good people. And the companies that do charge a good price for their work can afford to pay top dollar for the employees that they have working for them. And of course, when you're paying top dollar, you're going to have you'll develop a laundry list of guys that want to work for you. Why should they work for $18 an hour when you're paying $22?
Exactly.
Come to you and want to go to work for you.
And you got to retain them. It takes a lot of work and a lot of time, but it's your most valuable asset. So not only do you have to recruit the right guys, pay them well, but also treat them right and make them want to stay there. So because you've got other contractors that are poaching your guys every day. They'll offer them an extra couple of bucks. And if they're going to leave for that, you got a bigger problem than that. I mean, you want to pay them good wages, and you want to provide a good career path for them and a good place to work, and they're going to stay with you.
Yeah, and a couple other things you rarely see anybody talk about is that, you know, that you want to work on your employees' education and teach them as much as you can about that. That's one of the things that the guys like, because they think that the company is looking out for them, and that's true, they are. And the other one, again, is not something you hear a lot about, is you want to make sure that you kind of keep your finger on the pulse of how's their family doing. Most of these guys have, you know, spouses and significant others and possibly children, and you want to make darn sure that they're being taken care of.
Yep.
You know, because, it, you know, you stop and think about it. An employee that is having problems at home paying his bills or, you know, not getting along with his spouse or something like that is a distracted employee, and that means you're not getting 100% of their mental effort when they come to work.
Right. Now, something that we did, which a little pro tip, I think, it worked so well for us. We had basically a carnival every spring when things got a little slow, and we would invite the spouses and the kids, and we'd have a big deal. You know, it's primarily for the kids. We'd give out prizes, and if your kids are happy, they like being there. Your wife feels comfortable. She likes being there. Everybody's happy. And we use this as a great recruiting tool also, where we would say, hey, if you got some friends that are in the business and they want to bring their families, everybody come on. We have a great time. That just went so far because, you keep their kid. Everybody's happy. The wife's happy. She likes you working there. She likes the company. She's not going to be sitting there egging you on to go take a better job somewhere else. And this is just something that worked really well for us.
I think many years ago, I worked for a company that had a company picnic every year. And they rented one of the big theme parks in town. And they rented the whole thing and brought people in. I mean, they brought in subcontractors, suppliers, everybody was welcome. If they did business with them, that was the only criteria. They had to have done business with them, and they were welcome there. And the owner stood right there at the front gate on the morning when they opened up, and he greeted every single one of them and said, thank you, appreciate you coming, and got to meet the spouse and the kids. And that was true of he insisted that, like, the sales staff that I was on at the time, he said, I want you to get around and talk to everybody.
Mm-hmm.
It's called the side told you. I want you to make them feel welcome. You go talk to their spouses, the kids, you know, and just make them feel welcome here, because that's how we get good service the rest of the year. And he was dead on.
That's the biggest reason that people leave, is that they just don't feel appreciated. And where all it takes is, hey, thank you. Appreciate you working here. How's everything? How the kids? How's the family? It doesn't take a lot of time.
No, it doesn't.
Successful contractors generally appreciate their people and enjoy working with them, and that comes through. And it's a different world now. You've got to make sure that everybody's happy and that enjoys working for you. They're going to spread the word around the street that you're a great company to work for, and that's going to attract the best people.
Yep, and you know, and a lot of guys don't realize that there's an underground communication system in the construction industry. It's called the local watering hole on Friday afternoons after you get off work.
You bet.
You know, and that's where everybody hears about where everybody else is and what they're doing, how much they're making.
Now, those are the top six reasons that you say contractors go out of business, and I'm with you on every one of those things. So, Michael, what I've got for you now, I call the lightning round. I've got some questions that I get asked by contractors. So if we can just kind of, I'm going to throw these out to you just kind of quick, if we can get some quick answers. Is that okay by you?
Sure.
Great.
You betcha.
All right. Let's say, number one, let's just say I've got a $2 million company that I'm doing. Business is going pretty good. But cash is up and down. So when the cash comes in occasionally, I'll take some out and pay my bills with it. Is there anything wrong with that?
Yes. Yes. I have 10 cardinal rules for construction. And number 10 is you shall take a fixed salary from your business each month. Now that means every 2 weeks, once a month, you have yourself a salary set aside, you know, that you get paid. It's no fun working for free.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the amount you take out should be, if you've been in business less than 5 years, the amount you take out should be equivalent to about 8% of the sales price of all the jobs you sold. If you've been in business 5 years and longer, then depending on how long you've been in business, it can range anywhere from that 8% all the way up to 10%. 10% is about the limit that a company, that an individual should take out of the company. Okay. Now that means that, you know, if you've been in business 9 years, you might have be taking, you know, 8.5 or 9, 9.5, 10%, something or in there. And as time goes on, as your company can afford it, you take a little more. Now you can do that because you've proven you can keep your company going.
Right. Mm-hmm. So in my $2 million company, you're saying that been in business for a while, things are booming. I should be pulling out about $200,000 in salary. Is that right?
Yes. Now, that's not to say that, you know, and this is one of the mistakes that a lot of contractors make, and they listen to their CPAs who tell them if you have a sole proprietorship, partnership, LLC, or something like that, that your profits are your salary, and that is not true, okay? Your salary is an overhead expense listed on your P&L just that way, owner's salary. Right, and if you don't list that, if you listen to the CPAs and say, "Oh no, no, you get the profits from the company," that's not true. It has to be listed as an owner expense, or your markup is going to be too low, and you won't be charging your customers the amount of money you need to pay all your bills, including your own salary. Your markup doesn't have your salary in it, so how can you charge it? See,
exactly, and that goes back to our number one problem: we're not charging enough money, right?
There you go. That's exactly right. If you can't pay yourself, then there's something wrong, and it's usually you're not charging enough for what you do.
My number two, is that different than profit then?
Absolutely. Salary, owner's salary is what you get paid for owning and running the company. Profits, if you think about it, technically belong to the company to reinvest and build the company on. Those are two different issues completely. Now, the government may say, well, this is, you know, your salary is your tax, your income is your net profits or your salary. Well, that may be the way the government looks at it, but, you know, they know virtually nothing about construction, and they don't understand the principle of how to arrive at a good sales price for your work, which is job cost times sales price, or job cost times markup equals sales price. If your markup isn't right, you're not charging up for what you do, i.e., if your salary isn't listed under expenses and overhead, you're not charging enough for the work you're doing.
Exactly. Now, what is my target net profit that I should be looking at for a roofing company?
Roofing company, 8%, and that's minimum. Now, each company has to set their own number, but generally speaking, roofing companies, or actually any construction-related company, their minimum net profit should be 8%.
I'm with you on that. I agree. And my last question, something I hear about all the time is my backlog. Things are booming. I've got a backlog of 4 to 6 months, and contractors are bragging about that. That to me just sounds crazy, because you're booked up with, you know, maybe probably lower priced work, lower margin work that you took at a different time of the year. What do you think about this backlog business? What is a good backlog that contractors should look at, and why?
Backlog gives me severe gastrointestinal disorder. Backlog should be no more than 6 weeks. 4 to 6 weeks is a good backlog for a construction company of any kind. Of course, if you're doing, you know, high-end residential homes, that's a different issue. But for the average contractor, backlog of 4 to 6 weeks is sufficient. If you've got more than that, then your prices are too low. Raise your prices until you get your backlog down to 4 to 6 weeks. That's where it should be, which means you're doing less jobs and making more money. Now, do you tell me what's wrong with that picture?
You know, I couldn't agree with you more.
It's common sense.
Yeah.
So this idea of backlog, you know, these contractors wear this like a blue ribbon or something. Like, oh, I got this big backlog. And what that tells me loud and clear is they're not running their business the way they should, and they're not charging enough for what they're doing.
Right. And the other thing they do is they just stop marketing during this time. They stop answering the phone. They say, we're too busy and so forth. Now, what we did, we'd go out and take a look at these jobs, and here's something that, okay, we're just – we're booked up right now, but here's a good opportunity that we can repair this roof. We'll get you through the winter, and we'll do it in the spring when we're slow. You save the money. We do a little, make some repairs, keep it watertight. Everybody's happy. And now we've got work that we can do in the spring.
Yeah, it just a little, you know, there's the old saying about think outside the box, and I say the hell with the box, just think. Think of ways to solve these problems. You know, you got to get in tune and help your customers. You know, the customers, you know, they know nothing about roofing or remodeling or new homes or nothing. You know, very few of them, a lot of them think they do, but the reality is they don't. And so that's why they called you. And, you know, and you've got to be there to help them, and mentally, if not physically, you know, like you say, if you can do a quick patch job on something and get them through it until springtime or whenever. Of course, you know, down where you do, you don't have that much delays, but you go to North Dakota in the wintertime, and you're just not a whole lot of guys putting roofs on in December and January and February back there, I'll tell you.
Yeah. Okay, so it's a little different here. We build roofs for shade only.
Yep. Yeah, or up here where we are, it's you know, it's, we've had more water this year, and I can't remember when we had this much rain before.
Crazy.
Roofers have got to be, you know, they've got, I think one of the biggest mistakes a lot of roofers make is they're too busy putting shingles up instead of educating themselves on how to run a good business. Okay. And if you do that, you'll find you'll make a lot more money.
Yeah. Well, I think that's where education is just key. You've got to continue to learn. I've retired from the business. Yeah. And I went to your class because I always wanted to go, but the times had never worked out. And I just learned so much and always keep learning. In wrapping up, how do we get more information? Because you've got a wealth of information. You've got the classes. You've got your books. You've got the experience of, what do you say, 55 years of doing this? that's crazy. Yep. And you started at 10 years old, of course. But where can we get more information, and what can we find on your website, for instance? And tell us a little more about your business.
Well, our business is to help contractors take care of their families, and that's the bottom line, okay? Of course, there's a lot of other stuff that goes into it, but that's primarily what our focus is. We figure if we take care of contractors, you know, Zig Ziglar used to say, you can get everything in life you want if you help enough other people get what they want.
Mm-hmm.
And Devin, my wife, and I have tried to build our business based on how can we help contractors take care of their family, and that's what we do. The way we do that is providing good educational materials, books, and seminars. We do a lot of seminars around the country, and the contractors listening can go to our website at markupandprofit.com, and it's real easy to find. If you type in markup and profit, we'll pop up just bang right now. You're up there, and when you get into our website, you just look right across. There's a whole list of subjects. Click on the one you want, and it'll take you as an example. Every Wednesday morning, we have a newsletter that comes out, and it comes out at 6:30. Around 6 o'clock Eastern, 9 o'clock Pacific time, or maybe it's even earlier than that. I don't know. But it's our newsletter comes out every Wednesday morning, and it's anywhere from a page to 2 pages in length, covering, you know, some of the stuff we talked about today. And we got almost 1,000 articles on there. So there's a great wealth of information there. We've got a bookstore in there. We got all kinds of different products in there, not only our own, but from a number of other very well-done materials from other very good companies. And we have a listing on there of our seminars and classes that are going to be coming up this fall. We're done now because contractors get busy during the summer months, so we schedule our classes in the fall. So and we've always got our phone number. If somebody wants to know something, they're not sure where it is or how to find it, just give us a call. We're here. We'll answer any questions any way we can. Our phone number is 360-335-1100. And my email is michael@markupandprofit, all one word, .com.
Oh, that's great. And I recommend, I got to tell you, everybody out there needs to sign up for this newsletter because there's some great information. I read it every week, and it's consistent, and I got to hand it to you. You get some great information out there.
Well, thank you, David. Appreciate that.
Yeah.
We do our best, you know.
Well, you do a great job, and I really appreciate you taking the time to come on the show with us. Some great information, and you take care, and we'll see you soon. I appreciate it, Michael.
All right, bud. Thanks for calling.
All right. See you soon. Take care. That's it for today's show. If you want to get a copy of my one-page business plan, where you can create a professional business plan in just a few hours, go to theroofershow.com, where you can download it for free. Simply answer the questions, fill in the PDF, and print. Short and sweet. And as always, thanks for listening. I really appreciate it, and we'll see you next week on The Roofer Show.